Before we begin, a word from our sponsor.
Amazing Grace!
What's wrong, baby? Why can't you hit that note?
Oh, Grandma, my throat hurts. I tried everything. Tea with honey, tea with lemon, tea, even cough drops.
Well, that's the problem, baby. You've tried everything but the right thing.
Well, what's the right thing?
Child, I'm glad you asked. You need my Grandma Sadie's soothing throat lozenges. Her lozenges are a mainstay in the Black community. Why, it's made from a secret recipe, and it's been saving church solos and civil rights protests for generations. It'll coat your throat and soothe your soul. Oh, thank you, Father.
Okay, I'll take two.
Sadie's Soothing Throat Lozenges is made with a secret family recipe that includes a little love, some perseverance, and a whole lot of hot sauce. In just 30 minutes, you'll be ready to either make a joyful noise unto the Lord or scream at Whitey till freedom come. Well, how do you feel, child?
Amazing Grace. I feel, well, amazing. Thank you, Grandma.
Oh, baby, don't thank me. You need to thank your great-grandma, Sadie.
Thank you, great-grandma, Sadie.
Sadie's Soothing Throat Lozenges. Don't you let your solo go to hell.
And I was like, I have a problem with the fact that as soon as I file for unemployment, my last name is Urban. What's that about?
Something's wrong with you. That's what that's about.
Oh, so now I'm Urban? I see you. I'm woke, America. Yeah. They're just changing Black people's names again. I see you. I know what this is.
This is like a crime that's been perpetrated on my ancestors and everyone else since the time that they walked on Earth. And I'm not going to stand for it anymore. I'm going to sit down.
Yeah. Just have a seat. It's just like when Clarence Thomas said it was a digital lynching or high-tech lynching. But now since it's 2021, it's a digital lynching because I was on my cell phone. Welcome to Rappin' Atlanta. I'm Nita Charisse.
And I'm Nikki.
And in this podcast, we have a frank, honest, and open conversation about the FX show Atlanta.
We have noticed that there are similar features in each show, and during our discussion, we offer our impressions on what those features are. There's a That's So Atlanta moment in each episode that most clearly and accurately depicts the spirit of work that is Atlanta and life in the American South.
Dariusisms highlight the special flavor the character Darius brings to the show because he is easily one of the most layered, complex, and compelling characters on television.
There always seems to be a mystical element or some strange thing that happens beyond all logical reason and sometimes scientific explanation. We've all experienced those kinds of moments.
And finally, the SGR moment is very plainly the moment in each show when shit got real and we are reminded that life is not a game and desperation has the power to motivate any and every possible action. Today, we'll be discussing episode 4, The Big Payback, or as I like to refer to it, Long Live Shaniqua. This episode was directed by Hiro Murai and written by Francesca Sloan. When a Black man successfully sues a Tesla exec for reparations, white folks are forced to reckon with their slave-owning past. This episode was everything. I loved it.
This episode was everything, but it was also heavy because I mean, you know, we referenced something about reparations in the previous episode. You know, so obviously that's what's on Earn's mind. I feel like this is yet, you know, another dream episode. Because how close are we to this in real life, actually getting reparations? There are a number of bills happening in various different states, but then there's also a House bill on the congressional level, you know, the federal government level. So we'll see if it comes to pass. I was surprised that the anti-lynching law passed.
Very surprised. Yeah, I mean, but it had taken so long. So it's like, well, what is the difference now? What pushed it? Because I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't
get into the details and follow it, but I know that it was not a new thing that they've been trying to pass.
No, for more than 100 years, they've been trying to pass that law. Yeah, it is wild. Yeah, it's a very simple law, like don't kill somebody just because they're Black, but nope, couldn't get that to pass.
What if?
I mean, do we really want that?
it's just so economical and concise. It's showing, not telling.
But you know what? I had a feeling that it would pass, not because of anything else, but the number of movies that have come out recently, and they were all on Hulu, so easily accessible. So Billie Holiday's biopic, Mamie Till's story, yeah. You know, on the fact that it was on ABC, you know, the Disney Channel, which broadcasts all white people everywhere, you know, just a series of all of those
just
movies
them. Together.
That's what it's for. I'm sorry. That's what that channel is for. Let's admit it.
Yeah,
but all of those movies coming out during this past legislative session and season, I felt like it would be positive. And it's crazy, but that just goes to show you how valuable entertainment is. You know, as somebody who was a political science major, you know, and who has worked in politics, you know, trying to impact change in that way. And I still do, but I know that any message that I've written as a form of entertainment has probably had a farther reach. Every article I've written that has an entertainment slant, you know, has had a farther reach. It's just like, the Sistine Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sistine Chapel is pretty much a billboard for Christianity. So it was designed by artists in a time where people could not read. So that was commissioned, you know, those walls were commissioned, that ceiling was commissioned to be painted to reach lay people and to entertain them and to tell them, you know, pass them on a secret message, because people, God forbid, people just learn just because. You need to be entertained while learning.
Right, right. That's what I was going to say. No. So it's not just America. People have always been dumb. They've always been.
No, it's just people. Yeah.
And Zaza Zoo.
Yeah, especially like in Europe. That's what's been most impactful. You know, so art in museums means something, you know, art on television matters, you know, art in the form of music matters, because that's going to reach more people and that's going to persuade more things. They said that, what's that dude, was the guy, Dennis Haspert, when he played the president on 24, that's what actually led the way to Barack Obama becoming the first Black president.
Yeah.
Because people got used to seeing that idea and they were like, okay, I'm not.
We like that, but. Just had a little bit more cream in there. There it is. There we go. It's like they adjusted their television set. So for real life, let's turn it up. There we go. Ah, good. All right, Coffee Mate Press. Let's get off there. I read that. Yeah. Isn't that so?
So stupid? I was very happy to see but it's just how things work. So like, if you really want change to happen, get into entertainment, you know, and there's so many. Okay, I'm just gonna withhold because my mind just went on 5 different tangents, none of them positive. So
you want to save it for negative tangent part of the show? I'm playing around with transition, so we can totally do that. But I want to go back to something that you just said a couple seconds ago about entertainment having value, and it just makes me think about our trajectory, like Black people's trajectory in this country, where, you know, we're the lowest on the totem pole, but if you can entertain, it's like that bumps up your value. Like the guy talked about in the very first episode. Like he talked about, like, you know, they were always white. Like we are all very familiar with that phenomenon that happens when a beloved public figure in our community, we've known about them, we've consumed their art for years, but then they get noticed by the white, and then they transcend. Like whenever somebody says crossing over, it's that really is just saying, now white people know about you. So now you're on a bigger stage. And if you keep it up, Will Smith, you're not even looked at as Black anymore, which is the only reason why you asked people, one of the only reasons why you can stay at the Oscars after doing what you did. That, and you didn't slap a white man, but that's another thing. We will retire that subject. But like, so that point, the point at which Black celebrities become like just American or just like it should be, you usually have a talent and it's usually you're entertaining. Like, it's usually something where it's like, you're making a lot of money for this ball club, whether it's football or basketball or whatever it is. There's got to be a thing that then gives you value. And it's the entertainment value, which is a real phrase. It's just like, oh, wow. Like when you think about the people, the Black people that have managed to have good lives that are famous, that is usually why. I'm sure there are lots of scientists that we don't know about. And they're probably almost white too, but as far as people knowing about them, and when you are granted real money, like you hear performers say this all the time, I'm about to go get that white money. And that's the money that allows you, like we discussed last time, where your money is making money. It isn't like bringing a backpack of $20,000 to a game or a backpack $20,000 to throw to random folks who are waiting outside your dorm room jail cell. But it's like real, like I said, my money's on this jump drive. Like that's when it's like, you're rich because your money is right here. And that's interesting. And there is definitely a theme. And you said like, this is probably a dream too. It makes me wonder if, because they're in Europe, but I'm glad that they're giving us some Atlanta, if when they go back to Atlanta and the other people aren't in it, that's when Earn is asleep. Like, are we going to start the next episode and he's like waking up from this dream too? Like the times when they've not been overseas, I'm saying times, there's only been one time, but he was dreaming, right? Like the first, the first episode was a dream and he woke up there. Yeah. It just, I mean, that would be kind of cool if that's the convention that they're playing with. Like if it's next week, they're going to be, I don't know, in Paris. And then like when we get another Atlanta specific episode, if it's a daydream or just a dream or something like that, which I'm fine with that too.
I'm fine with it. I think it's definitely a way to like just articulate how that bond, no matter where you go, if you're tethered to a place, you know, a space, an environment, then you're forever connected to it or wherever you go and you care about it. Just like, you know, I've lived here for the past decade. I've birthed and raised my kids here, but I'm still Californian. And if you ask every other Atlantan who's come from somewhere else, they still say they're from somewhere else, even 20, 30 years later.
But I mean, because that's you. And I don't know if Atlanta is like New Orleans in this particular respect. They probably are, because, you know, much as they hate each other because of football teams, they're very, very similar. But like in New Orleans, you better claim your original place, because they can't stand when people start trying to act like you're not from here. Always rep your original city. Like they will say, you're a transplant, that you're from California. I would say people down here claim their original, because original New Orleanians lose their minds if you dare say, I'm from here because I've been here for 10 years. No, you still from that other place. We just let you live here. They're so serious. They're like, you must identify as a transplant or there will be repercussions. They're so serious.
It's still ridiculous though, because the transplants do indeed have an effect on the environment in which they dwell. You know, there it's a stew. It's a stew. Anyway, okay. So jump into this episode. I love the progression that they show with Marshall Johnson, this character. He is so oblivious. He's living in this world. He is blissfully unaware of anything outside of his reality. I thought this was so smart. He's standing in a coffee shop, ignoring the world around them. He stole the cookies. Did he mean to? No. But did he enjoy the benefits of that theft anyway? Yes, he did, and with a smile. And that is the entire episode.
Yeah. You can really just thank you for listening to Rap in Atlanta. Like, that's it. Not to say anything else.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. I loved how they told that little story at the opening sequence, because that says it all. While this dude in the elevator talking about, it's not fair. No, it's not fair how you've been benefiting off of this crime for centuries, blissfully unaware of the pain that it's caused, but still smiling all the way to the bank, you know, as you've continued to build your life off of the investment of our blood. Like, yeah. Okay, so he goes to his estranged, well, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, you said that he's ignoring the world around him. When it first came on, I looked up because I recognized the intro to a podcast that I listened to, the Radiolab mm-hmm. podcast. And did you listen to what they were discussing?
I was paying attention to it, but not as closely as you were. So please.
Well, the second time I watched. It's a Radiolab podcast, or by Radiolab. And these two hosts are talking about, isn't it amazing that scientists have been able to enter the wild, like the wild animals that are speaking. Of course, we don't understand what wild animals are saying. And he said, but they found a way where they can now interpret it. And now they're calling it, instead of just like wild noises or something like that, it's wild talk, or like wild language. And then the guy was like, it's pretty. It's like, now we can now step into this cool space and see what they're talking about. And while that's happening, because he has this AirPod on, which, yeah, he's blissfully unaware, but that is totally me out in the wild all the time. I'm like, yes, like I have a podcast on. I was like, oh no, I'm identifying with this white man, whatever. So while that's happening, there's a black man at the counter having like a very animated, loud conversation. Mm-hmm. His name is Lance Irvin. And you can't hear him because he's muffled, but while they're saying, now we can interpret what they're saying, then he gets louder. And then it focuses in, and you can't hear everything he's saying, but at some point he's like, I was like, nigga, what? Like, he's having this loud conversation. And I just thought that was, it was a nice little connection, just very smart. Just like you said, like just with him having the cookies, just in this very little short way, they just show the whole thing, but also in how one of the hosts says, so it's pretty nice, because now we get to step into this cool space where we previously like didn't understand like what was happening, and now we can see what's going on. And I'm like, yeah. And then are there going to be some white people coming in and saying, I made up elephants and the way elephants talk? It's like, yeah, because whenever you all are able to step into a space, you mess it up or you take credit for it or something like that. And as they're saying that, then he's taking off, he takes his butt out, because the cashier, I think, is trying to see.
Ask him if he, yeah.
Now, what I didn't understand was, the black man was standing there. Yeah, he was on the phone, but she was standing in front of him. Did she ignore him to just, because she tells him to get back in line? What was happening?
It looked like she was talking to him. He was on his phone, talking on his phone, but he was still also ordering. But so there was some interaction, but it was just not the same interaction that she had with Marshall.
But my thing is, so if I'm already up here and you tell me to get back in line, it's like, first of all, there was no line. I'm the only one up here. I wanted to find out, wait, what's happening with this right here? And they didn't, which I'm sure was on purpose, but I was like, in what world? And then he just let it go. And it could be because he didn't want to get murdered by the cops.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because they use that as a threat. Like, I'm going to call the police. Marshall does it later on. So yeah, it was so good. I'm like, this has been on for a total of 15 seconds. And there's 10 think pieces on this part alone. When this is over, yeah, I'm going to search first 10 seconds, and there's going to be 25 think pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. That said so much. Like, you know, this guy is unaware. He comes in on the tail end. There's obviously been some sort of exchange that was not friendly, you know, but it doesn't matter to him. So he continues. And then all the while he's stealing, taking advantage, because she says, well, will there be anything else? No, he just gets a coffee.
You know? I think he really forgot, because she startled him and he was like, oh, and he put it in his pocket. It was like a very, which I didn't notice the first time.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that, but I was like, what's up with the cookies? Why is he staring? But I was watching it live. So I didn't want to go back, but I didn't notice how he just casually, because you know, he wasn't trying to steal the cookies, but he did try when the woman told him, sir, get back in line, he could sense there was something. He's like, no, go ahead. He said no. So it's like, hey, I tried. I'm one of the good ones. I donate $50 to UNCF all the time. Oh, that's okay. Well, that's all I can do. Let's just keep it moving here.
Yeah. It's that, you know, again, that unawareness, the thing is like, well, it's not really affecting me. It's not having like a big effect on my life. It's happening to other people. It doesn't really involve me. And so as he's going to the car, after he discovers the cookies and eats them, does not go back to offer to pay for them. It's beyond him now. We noticed the Ford Taurus the first time. I had to watch the episode 3 times before I noticed that initially. So he goes by his estranged wife's house. They're cordial, they're polite and co-parenting. There's a hope that they might get back together. He hears the news story, he tunes in, you know, he's listening to it, actively listening to it. But again, it's happening to other people, you know, other involvement doesn't concern him. Plus he and his wife might be getting back together. You know, yeah, that's what
he's got other things to worry about, you know. Mm-hmm. And his daughter's like, mommy sprayed herself with perfume. So, and I'm thinking, look, Katie, stay out of it. Your mom might have a date that's coming over after y'all leave. Stupid.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on. The kids, the poor kids. What annoyed me about that, the radio show, was where they said, well, it just feels divisive. Reparations feels divisive.
Anything that's important to look at. You said earlier, people don't pay attention to things unless there's entertainment value. It's like whenever there's change, it is because we have gripped white America by their follicles right here. And you have to say, look at it. There's a pandemic and you can't go outside. Oh my God, what are they doing to this man? They just killed him. It's like, this is the 1 billionth man. Whenever they can't go anywhere and they're forced to look at it, Disney, like you said, it only broadcasts to white people. They were like, what? What? Have you heard of Emmett Till? They have to, like, he was not concerned with it. When he gets on the elevator with that dude who looks like the guy from Modern Family, looks like a very angrier KKK version of, can't think of his name.
Bryan Cranston? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. Randall.
On Modern Family. I think his name is Randall, but this dude looked like racist Randall. Okay. And he's like, that guy's rich anyway. So there's a little bit of the class thing too. Like, yes, it's not affecting him, but that's another way that I think they were smart. Like, they didn't choose a rich dude. It was a regular dude who, if you ask him, like, hey, I'm great. I'm not racist. When I could tell something untoward was happening to the young black gentleman in the coffee shop, I said, hey, why don't you go? Like, I'm good. I'm cool. I don't have to interrogate anything. I don't have to maybe like give my daughter a heads up, like, about anything. I'm just a regular dude. He didn't care because he was like, the guy's not going to notice it. He's rich. And when they said that, I was like, yes, but something's going to happen where it's not just going to be about the rich people anymore. It's going to be all y'all. And now you're going to get to see what it feels like to, like I said in the last episode, be trying to run and like somebody says their foot on your laces. It's like, pull yourself up, come on. Or like that, you're running and somebody's just, you're trying to hit and they're just like, ha. So like, they did a good job of just showing like, hey, your world is about to be rocked. And are you going to be Mr. Nice Dude anymore? And it doesn't take long. Like that rage under the surface bubbling. I feel like the same thing happened here. You know, like when white people get mad, it's like, wait, what? I mean, they get mad, and then that woman, like, look at them, not a care in the world, talking about black people, like, bitch, not a care in the world. Are you kidding me? She was so angry. So angry. I'm like, y'all are usually the ones that don't have a care in the
world. She was angry.
She was so mad.
Scratching her neck and everything, just really having a hard time. And the woman sitting out there in the parking lot crying like her life is over.
Yes, white tears.
Yeah.
Look at them. Not a care in the world. I spit my drink out. Like, what?
There was 3 different women. No, but it was hilarious because they're purely seeing it from a money standpoint. They're not seeing it from like, all of this other trauma that happened on top of this. And finally, there's some equity happening. They're just like, yeah, but we're losing our money and we didn't have anything to do with this. Yeah, you did. You're reaping benefits. Oh, girl, this is part of the end that says it all for me. But anyway, let me get there. Let's get there. But yeah, I was laughing at the Black folks at work celebrating because, again, they're just going to gather. They're not going to be loud, but you know, we're saying everything that needs to be said. It's about time. Meanwhile, the white folks are going back to their desks. They're doing ancestry lookups to see how this thing will affect them. You know, there'll be layoffs and whatnot. I loved it. He goes on about his day. He's a little bit more concerned, but again, it's happening to other people, not really him. Why should he look it up? His daughter brings it up. So they've talked about it in school. And then he starts off, well, Black people are like, no, this is, don't put it on Black folks.
What else he's going to say? He was like, we're not racist. Right now, Black people are just, and I was like, just what? I wanted to know, like, what were you going to, like, they're just overreacting? Like, what were you going to say? I really, really wanted them to finish that. But really quickly, because you know that that was a Black kid that went up to her and said that. She's like, this kid at school said that we're racist. That's a Black child that saw part of something and then just went to school and mouthed off. And I know that because I did that in third grade after I watched Roots. I went to my evangelical 98.7% white school and church and told a girl in my class that she made us work. I just walked in and was like, you made us work. And she was like, huh? And I was like, all y'all just had us working and you beat us up. And you, I don't think I said split up families, but whatever little way I said it, that's what I was talking about. And I didn't clear this with anybody. I asked my parents no questions because when I was younger, I'd be like, I would come up with what a thing was and would never get it vetted. I was just like, this is what it is. I never said, hey, mom, unless it was something where I'm like, I have no frame of reference, but I'm like, I saw it on the TV show and my dad never stopped to say like, this is about a long time ago. I looked at it as all the other shows that come on are happening right now. So is this one. Because it made me afraid that my grandfather was going to get in trouble for being married to my grandmother because she's super fair. I was terrified for him. I just knew, like, you're going to jail. And then I was like, why are they just flaunting this? They're just out in the open, just living in their house, not trying to hide. What is wrong with them? Teacher, and I don't ever remember anything happening to me, but that's what that reminded me of. So when she said, oh, this kid told me this, I was like, yeah, that was a Black kid and no one is explaining anything to that child. he's just going up to people, accusing them of being racist. Yeah, yes. So that was just funny. That just made me think about some child that I traumatized. What if she remembers? We're friends on Facebook, and I often want to ask her if she remembers that.
Changed her life. I think this was the first time in the car riding home with his daughter, he brings up the Austrian-Hungarian thing. And then keeps on bringing it up.
No, that was his second time. I thought. No. It was the first time. The second time was with the woman.
Yeah, because he brings it up again and she's like that was centuries ago.
with the confidence of someone who just found out that they were slaves too. It did not take her long to just totally just dig in, just like last week when what you were talking about with the mob, where it was like, you know, it doesn't take long. It's like, oh, we're going to put on like anger and oppression. Like they want to be oppressed so bad. Her whole attitude changed to, personally, I don't think that they were hard enough on. I'm like, look at this bitch. Just immediately, you know, like, so you, no one knew that you were Jewish. And she's like, it's time for the world to know. Like, oh, so now you're proud. They put aside what ethnicity they do have or culture that they do have. To be white. They will gaslight you and act like you're making that stuff up. You pretend that it doesn't exist, but you do everything you can to fiercely defend it. And now you're embracing, like, why was it a secret? And to just watch all these white people grasping for some sort of non-whiteness,
was, yes, it was hilarious and infuriating.
Yes, even when he goes back to the wife, she's now owning her Peruvian heritage. She, there's no hope of them getting back together again. She doesn't need her finances messed up. And then she wouldn't even give him the lamp that he asked for. She put it out in the trash.
Put it in the trash. I saw that the third time. I was like, wait, that's the lamp. Like, homeboy should have, when he saw that, he should have known. Because she still could have given it to him.
Yeah, she still could have given it to him.
But in separate plates. She is sending a message.
No, she got it separated from him as possible, even changing the color of her emoji.
This bitch went to set it immediately.
That's what, but is that, how is that not unlike when you have European immigrants? There's no whiteness in Europe. There's still the tribe, the tribal groups, the tribal ethnicities of Europe are still there, but there's whiteness when they come over here to America, and they do everything in their power to absorb, embrace, inherit, you know, embody that. And it was so interesting to see the reverse. Like, yeah. This white supremacy thing ain't working out like anymore.
100% Nordic. How the fuck is that possible? That said so much, because how the fuck is that possible? Any other time, y'all act like it is impossible that you could have anything else in your
inside body, you.
Even though you mm-hmm. live in Louisiana, that has already said, I don't know if this was a fact that we pulled up that, or no, from the museum. I was reading. Louisiana has the highest percentage of white people that have other blood in them. And it's like, of course, because Louisiana was just like, if it looked like a duck, it quacked like a duck, we gonna fuck. Like, everybody was fucking everybody. So,
yeah.
But so any other time, they act like there's no way. Like, they don't understand how you could even say, and now she's like, how is 100% Nordic? How is that possible? I'm like, first of all, you look like the first Barbie ever made. 100% Nordic. I was like, not only did y'all own slaves, but y'all probably started the KKK, because that's some pure Watt blood right there.
Yeah,
like, y'all made sure that nobody ever darkened your doorstep, literally, figuratively, and all that.
So. There were so many funny little moments when he went back to work. So the Nordic thing, her talking about being Jewish, him bringing up the Austrian Hungarian thing again, the fact that only two Black people came to work, and they were Black men, noticeably, because there was four Black women there yesterday. They're like, we're not coming back.
Yeah, it's no need. Because they have two jobs, so whatever, because they stayed home, they still had to work. But it also made me wonder, though, the two who came to work, if they had higher positions.
Probably.
Because, like, usually for us, if we're in higher positions, we probably interact with the white people even more. And mm-hmm. so, like, there's more of a, not tolerance, but, like, you can deal with it more. And you can see that in his interaction with Lester. I believe it was Lester. Yeah, because Willie was the one that was like, whatever, Ashley. That was Willie. The names, for some reason, made me laugh. Like, Willie and Lester, like, yeah, those are Black people. Especially Willie. But the way that Lester was acting, it made me wonder. I wonder how many times Marshall has spoken to Lester.
Has come and asked him for advice.
Right. Yeah. Like, initiated a conversation that wasn't like, hey, did you get my email? Like, that wasn't work related. Because Lester didn't look like shocked that he was talking to him, but it was like a, what do you want, man? Like, I just liked how the Black people were able to occupy the space of being so unbothered, and not unbothered the way we usually are, because we actively have to make sure that we're unbothered. But this was literally like, we gonna be all right, like, for real. Like, y'all are the ones that are stressed out now.
They were talking about what new cars they were gonna buy, like how the kids were gonna get a phone, how the man was gonna set up his other, I guess he had a previous relationship with a woman, they had kids, and so he was gonna move them out to a separate place.
It was
place
more than one woman tired. Though. I was like, nigga. He said, sister's mom and sister's mom. I'm like, what? Cause then Lester was like, oh, word? Like, he was surprised. Like, it sounded like he was saying about to buy two houses or like two condos. And he's like, you already know. And I'm like, I already know that your dick needs to settle down. Well, what I did get kind of mad about, but
so personally,
I do. I'm like, I'm Sierra's mama. I immediately take on, who is the downtrodden one? That is me. I'm pissed with you. I need it for energy. Like, anger gives me energy. My house is gonna be so clean. I just need to watch that scene again. about to clean this entire house just off the, like, anger is a natural resource for me. But oh shit, what was I gonna say? I was a little irritated that one of them was discussing buying a Cadillac, and it made me think about that Dave Chappelle sketch, which I think we should link to in the show notes, where they got the reparations and people were just buying all kinds of things. They're like, yes, son. I love when he says son. He shows his age, but he's so funny. Like, son, we about to buy this and this. I was just like, did they have to have him say Cadillac? I just like how Atlanta will, of course, I'm forever like roasting white people, but they poke fun at black people too. Like, you know what we do.
He's like, well, there's things Cadillac. That we do. We just that's what we do. Yeah. Okay, so is it that at that point where he is it the previous? No, he goes home that night. And that's when he gets served with the
papers? Yeah, he's at home with his daughter. They're having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And but two times his phone rang from an unknown number and he ignored it.
Yeah. And he all this time he's being followed by the Ford Taurus. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you know, and all the while this Tesla lawsuit is getting closer and closer and closer to him until it shows up right on his front door. I love that progression. The guy who serves him the papers, he's there, and then Shaniqua is there, and yeah, she's like, "We're the I'm Shaniqua Johnson of the St. Louis Johnsons."
Yes, I was just like it, like watching that. I was irritated. I'm like, okay, Shaniqua, but then I said, no, she's acting like a white person. She just came on in like. I have claim to this. I have claim to whatever I want, just the confidence. Cause I was a little scared for her, even though Marshall is not that white person that was going to be like, I'm going to institute the stay in your ground. I mean, Marshall doesn't have a gun. Like he's, you know, he's already like listening to NPR adjacent podcasts and things like that. It just mm-hmm. continues with the liberals are the worst. Oh shit. What were we saying?
Yeah. So Shaniqua shows up on his door. On his doorstep.
I did.
Well, yeah, well, you were saying that he's not the type to do stand your ground, but he is the type to weaponize the police because that's his first threat. I'm going to call the police. And she's like, I've already called them.
Why? Like, what did she do with that?
And see, that's what makes this make believe because she has the full force of the law behind her. Working in her favor. And that's why I think this would never happen in real life. You know, white folks went to revolution over increased taxes over tea. You think they would peacefully stand by and let the laws change to affect them having to pay restitution to Black people? You really think that would happen here in this country?
Because when he was listening to the news, to the report about it, the two hosts are talking and the one host says like, yeah, this may actually go through. And the other was like, no, it did. Like, I thought that was strange. He was like, it did go through. Cause it's like, you're discussing this. This dude is in such denial that he's reporting on the story and he's still saying, I mean, this has a real chance. And he was like, it did go through. And the guy had this sound in his voice like,
yeah, it happened.
Motherfucker, that's what we're talking about. Like that the dude was successful. And the other host was still like speaking in maybe. And he's like, it did, in fact.
The hypotheticals, no.
Yeah, because that's what they use for like paying a little bit of lip service. You know, so.
Mm-hmm.
So good, so good.
Yeah, that's why I was also like in a state of disbelief because there's no way like they would give us the full force of the law without other people. And if people would lose their entire wealth and not be able to get it back, you know, paying back who they owe. So the daughter goes back to the mom's house. He pulls up to his apartment and Shaniqua's now like camped outside.
Well, first before that, because we didn't really talk about the part where he gets the text message from his wife. She went and picked up the little girl from school and he was supposed to. So he goes over to the house.
Okay.
And then that's when we see the lamp is in the trash can. And is it my imagination? Or does she look more brown or more something? Like, I looked at it at first. Her hair was always dark, you know, because I remember like noting, I'm always surprised when I see a brunette white woman because you know, like usually on TV, there's always some sort of like blonde or something. And when I saw her, I was like, oh, this woman has dark hair. That's all I even thought about. Then she said the Peruvian thing. And she had like a kind of brownish cardigan on, but I swear to God that when he went back, it looked like more earth tones. And she just looked more like, if you looked at her, you would think, oh, she's not just white. And to me, she didn't look like that before. I could be projecting, I don't know. But I was just like, does she look a little bit more like golden or like brown? Like maybe not her actual skin, but, and like her hair seemed like it was swooped more like 1996 when everybody was swooping. And this time I swear to God, it was more like she put edge control on the front of it, like swooped it.
Okay. So when she first referenced the fact that she was from Peru, I was just like, oh, I'm Peruvian, so none of this applies to me. Bitch, no. I made a note to look this up. By the 19th century, slaves formed the heart of Peru's plantation labor force. But Spain and Portugal were primarily responsible for the way that the slave trade was happening in South America. Peru is in South America. So there was slavery all up and through there. And then there's still like extreme forms of colorism and social, the social caste system is, it's like hyperbolic, you know, it's like there's like 20, 30 different types of mixed levels of biraciality that you can have. Yeah. So the fact that she said that, I was like, okay, bitch, well, your truth will come out at some point. You know, like, especially if it's a global thing and not just American thing. Yeah, you're one of the worst. So shut up.
It's another example of they learned it from watching you.
So at this point then, you know, after he passes the lamp in the, which was just petty, after he passes the lamp in the trash, then he goes back home and and Shaniqua's camped out outside of the apartment, you know, ready to lay total claim. Like all of the cousins are there, they're having a cookout. And what cracks me up is how he is legitimately scared for, what's his name, Todd or Jason, who is in flip-flops, but he takes off his flip-flops to run like the Terminator after it's gone. Now, okay, now I gotta tell you a little story. I know this is a tangent, but so Charisse and I, we were coming back late one night from the city, and we drove down Donald Lee Hollowell Parkway, which I've talked about before. You know, we drove through Bankhead. And so I was just like, okay, so now we're in a neighborhood, one of those neighborhoods. She's like, we gonna be robbed? I'm like, yeah, because some niggas gonna be running down the street after us in the car. Like, there hasn't been a red light yet, but we gonna be robbed driving down the street. So I'm just like, stop it. It's like, families and people live in this neighborhood just because it's black, you know, and there's some, you know, there's some crazy things that may or may not have happened here in the past doesn't mean we're about to get knocked in the head and robbed right away. Marshall Johnson was driving away like this dude could really do something to him on foot while he was in the car.
You know that we're magical human beings, not quite human. He probably thought there was some kind of slave like Easter egg or something that he had where his feet could turn into wheels or some stupid shit.
Like, yeah, so all of us are secret super niggas, like capable of just superhero powers.
Yes.
Including running alongside of a car and catching it.
Not super enough to be worth anything, but super enough to like.
That's just insane.
To harm them.
So then he goes to the hotel.
Yes, because it doesn't have anywhere to live. I would like to note that they were playing Keith Sweat and Make It Last Forever, which was a real black event. Like, make this last forever. Reparations. Like, this is never gonna. I was like, now that is black. Like, they just all are no real space, but they have camped out as if they're in a field.
It's like they brought a table. They brought a table and chairs.
You know, we travel with like with those festival chairs and just tables at any moment. It's like. Yeah. Like, is that a pot? Like, yeah, that's the crab boil pot. It's in the back of the truck.
You never know when you're going to need it. It's best to be prepared.
Oh my goodness. When you become a homeowner, they issue you one. Like, here's your crab boil pot. Here's your little card table and some chairs. That was hilarious.
So he goes to the hotel to avoid Shaniqua, and then he comes in contact with Ernest.
Ernest, like, that's your boy.
Yeah, he's from Lake Lanier.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
He's the guy from Lake Lanier. I recognized him right away, and I'm like,
that's how I know, like, Ernest, like, this is Ernest dreaming still. It has to be.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I recognized him right away. They have their conversation. And he talks about how, like, his grandfather always said that he pulled himself up by the bootstraps, but that was a lie. He had lots of help and he had lots of children.
A lot of kids.
Yeah. But he's like, but now it's okay because we're all going to be free. You know, your kids are going to be free of this. And in a way, he's right. You know, like, own up to it and face it. And then you could be done with it. And then we can all go on and live our lives. But you're going to pay what you owe, you know? You need to pay what you owe. I guess.
Like everything you've done.
Man, that was actually satisfying when Ernest went out to the pool. I knew something was going to happen because I was just like, okay, this shot tells me that I need to be paying attention. They keep showing him outside the window.
Yes.
You know, something is going to happen. Yeah. And he died in the water. Did he die in Lake Lanier?
Why is he named after Ern?
I don't know.
So weird.
It's something to that. Because, yeah, I noticed that right away. His name is Ern. Like, yeah. You know.
And I did not realize that. I noticed that it was him. But the name, yeah. I don't think I noticed that till the second time. I was like, wait a minute. Because, you know, they don't always say Ern. Like, you know, like, Ern is with people who know him. So you don't overuse somebody's name.
I don't think they said that this guy at Lake Lanier, I don't think they said his name was Ernest at Lake Lanier.
No. I meant I did not pick up on it, even though I know what Ern's name is, but I didn't pick up on the name until the second time I watched it, because when Ern is with Darius and Al, they don't say his name that much. So, like, I don't even think of Ern as Ern, like, really. Like, when he said my name is Ernest, I didn't think of Ern the first time.
Oh, okay.
It was the second time. I was like, how did I miss that? And I'm like, well, you know, it isn't like when he's in a scene, but then they're constantly like, Ern, Ern, Ern. It's just, you know, like they're comfortable. So that's what made me think, okay, this has to be him dreaming again, even though they didn't end it like they did the first one where they show him waking up.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, so when we get our Atlanta elements, it's in Ern's mind. Because like you've said, in this episode, in this recording, and the one previous, no matter where you go, where you are tethers you. So he's in Amsterdam and London and all these different places. Who knows where they'll be next week? But he's still, I feel like he's thinking about what things, like he's thinking about home, but then he's also juxtaposing that with, like we said before, he's in the crotch of the grandpappy of racism. Like,
yeah,
where all this shit started. Like that center clause is like, when you're studying something and you'll see like this was the very first bike and it looks like a bike, but there's something like weirdly like ancient, like it's a precursor. So he is in, like, the precursor to racism. That Santa Claus is super creepy and looks old, but if you put it next to Sambo, it's the same thing. It's like, yeah, it's just evolved into this. So
yeah,
it's like, I guess it's really being affected by the experiences that he's having overseas, because we always think there's no racism over there, or it's different because so many Black people, like entertainers, stars, left here to go there. So you have in your mind that it's better. And it just makes me wonder, did Ern think, oh, it's going to be lit because, you know, it's so different over there. But he's seeing like, oh no, this was the blueprint
for
the bullshit that America just like made better through that good old American know-how. They made it like worse. You know,
we know it exists. We know it's deeply entrenched, and it's beyond the pale of being fixed. And we all saw it. The racism that exists plays out on a grand stage, just with Meghan Markle alone, and you know, just the rejection of her. Like, how dare she, you know, become one of us when she's so not one of us. You know, it's just, it's
like, you're right. Insane. She isn't. She's better. And you remember how one of the members of the royal family wore this brooch? She pretended that she didn't know that it was offensive.
Yeah.
It was basically like, was it a monkey? It was something that was basically like blackface on her outfit, her shirt. To the wedding.
Yeah. just, yeah. So it's more insidious. And I think that he's, you know, he's unlocking that, and it in turn is unlocking certain things in his mind, you know, thoughts that he's having. After Marshall has this conversation with Ernest before he shoots himself in the pool, I like how he's obviously affected by the conversation that they just had. And so he goes and looks up Shaniqua's Instagram page because his coworker has told him that, oh, she's all over Instagram.
And she's literally like no longer one of them. She was like, oh, she's just talking about how much money you are. She is so cool and comfortable now that she found out she's 69% Ashkenazi Jew, that the way she even relates to the other white people is like she's other now.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't show her like trying to have lunch with Black people. I guess because there were no white people there.
But again, I've seen the reverse of that happen all too often. So yeah, it was, oh God, this episode, this is probably becoming one of my most favorite episodes of this season, at least. But yeah, he looks up Shaniqua's Instagram page and sees this video and recognizes her humanity. She's out there riding bikes with her kids and she's like, oh, I'm so proud of you. And he now sees her as a person, which I don't think he saw before. She was just a nag, a nuisance, something that's, you know, that was claimed. Yeah. But now she's a person. So is it after this that he is resigned to the fact, I mean, well, there's the suicide, but then he's resigned to the fact that he's got to pay what he owes.
It's after he sees her saying, I'm proud of my babies. And I like how I guess he's a busboy. Like after the guy kills himself, he was like, there's a lot more where that came from. Like, so people have just been offing themselves.
Yeah.
just at this hotel. Yeah. And then you see him. It doesn't start, the scene doesn't start off with him. It starts off like it's going to follow this Latinx looking guy who's on the bus, who's listening to the weirdest music ever. Like, why are you listening to this music that should be the backing for a tech commercial?
Yeah, I don't know. Weird.
And then but I was also bus driver because she ain't watching the damn road. She flirted with him. Like, bitch, you got people's lives in your hands. Watch the road.
I've never seen a city bus driven by a white person. But anyway, I've never seen that before. Usually the bus drivers are Black or, you know.
Well, she probably did because they're taking their, I guess they're having to take on these menial type jobs now. And you never know. It could be in, maybe he hasn't quit his job. It could be in addition to.
Yeah. So, he goes back, he's working at this restaurant. He has to go back at the inn and say who he's paying restitution for. They like, ooh, 15%.
He's trying to get that shit over with. Yeah. But also I saw that as, so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if in this world, the new liberal humble brag is the percentage that you're giving for reparations to show that you're a good person. Cause it was kind of like that, like it seems like probably you only need to give 10 or like that. Maybe that's the minimum or maybe that's the maximum. I also thought that it was interesting that, cause he makes it a point to say, at least they're not garnishing tips. Well, I worked in a restaurant for years. The real money that you make is in tips. Servers make $2 and like, I think they got a raise to $22.25 an hour. Cause it was $2.13 an hour for years. And that's based in racism too. Like that whole thing, like used to be like, why is this okay that these people are making this much and no one, because they make the most in tips. I wouldn't be surprised if he still works at his regular job, because if you're like all servers know you make your money Thursday to Sunday. Like there were servers who didn't even bother. Like they didn't do lunch rushes and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to Sunday. I've seen it. They make bank. That is where their money is, especially if you're a good server. This is someone who has held on a professional job and like knows how to be, you know, like he has some sense. So he's not probably not a server that sucks. So he's probably making his tips, because the more educated you are, you know, if you're taking a lower job, you just do it in a more excellent way than like somebody that's trying to like save money for their first car, like a teenager. You know, like people like to hire those kind of folks. I would not be surprised, like you're pointing out that this woman is who's driving the bus. I wouldn't be surprised if all the white folks that you see that are doing this, it's an additional job. So it's like, this is my reparations job. Because many of us have two jobs, you know.
Exactly.
Or three.
Well, I noticed that. And then I also noticed how most of the diners in the restaurant were Black. there are few non-Black folks might have also been people of color, but another race or whatever that somehow wasn't directly affected and having to pay back the slave trade. But now they're enjoying life and they're being waited on hand and foot by these white people. And that was a very sweet
ending. That was awesome.
Yeah. It was very sweet ending. Yes, I enjoyed this show. Is this gonna happen without a war? No.
This is real sweet, but like they'd be killing folks.
Yeah.
We would have to have a war. I mean, you mentioned that what switched him over was seeing her humanity. I think also he loves his kid. And when he said your child would be free from this, I think it's all about just his daughter too. Like not having to deal with this. Like he looked at the video of her, she's talking about her kids. And, you know, and I agree that it made him look at her like a human because they don't look at us as human in their DNA. Like if they come across a Black person. So I think it was twofold, seeing her with her kids and then thinking about his own and how distressed his kid was because they're not talking, they don't talk to their kids about anything. Because she was legit worried, like, are we racist? And they don't have to. They don't have to discuss it. And she obviously doesn't know what slave means either. Because he was like, do we have slaves? It's like, I paid.
Mr. Pedro. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's amazing how like, okay, now you're noticing things, you know, like stepping into the wild. Like, did you see how he looked at those people? Like he's listening to the report. I don't know at which point this happened, but he's driving past like a BP. And it's just like two Black people like laughing, but it's like, he's noticing, oh, Black people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're all around you living life, you know, not strangling you some kind of way.
Okay. So are you ready to go through the elements?
Let's go to the elements. And I'm kind of okay. My That's So Atlanta was the front porch cookout.
Oh man, it's been a while since I've seen one, but yeah, they do exist. They have a very Black slight look. We don't have space, we've got a backyard, but we're gonna make this front porch work.
Let down the bed of the truck.
Yes.
It's a built-in seat. This is a window seat.
Yeah, it is tailgating, except, you know, it is the equivalent of tailgating. My That's So Atlanta was, so at the beginning of the episode, they show a family picture. And it's a Zoo Atlanta. She's got on a Zoo Atlanta t-shirt and her face is painted like a panda. So I was just like, yep, that's Atlanta. And then also the radio personalities riffing about, oh, I'm gonna get my Apollo cheese. Apollo cheese. It's like, I know somebody owe me $50 million right now. That is exactly how we would talk about this. Cause that's how we talk about everything. Yes.
Mystical element for me was Ernest making another appearance, schooling somebody on the history of racism, white supremacy.
I had the same thing. Our SGRs were slightly different, I'm guessing.
So mine is when E commits suicide, just how shocking, like you said, from the shot we knew something was about to happen, but I don't think that I was expecting that. It just jarring. I mean, whenever someone just blows their brains out quietly, it's always a little shocking.
Like, it should be shocking. It should be. Yeah.
But I mean, everybody but your boy working in the dining room was shocked. He just kept wiping his tables down like, yeah. That's where that came from.
Yeah. So there was something that he said where I was just like, okay, yes. And that's when I noticed where, you know, the protagonist is like, okay, this is real. It snapped for him. And then that's what made him go look at, you know, her Instagram page, Shaniqua's. But when Ernest says slavery is not past, it's not mystery. It's a cruel, unavoidable ghost that haunts in a way that we can't see. Yeah, that's real.
That's institutionalized racism.
Who wrote that? Was that Francesca Sloan wrote that? Yes, honey. Yes. Kudos. Hats off to you. I could not have done a better job in encapsulating. This was awesome. Yes, it was a great episode. This quest for reparations has been going on for centuries now. And and someone has successfully won a case. So it's only a matter of time before we have the right, you know, the right plaintiff and the right defendant. Mm-hmm. And it could set a great precedent, but I think knowing how the law works, there's always lawyers waiting for wealthy folks to change so they won't be adversely affected. Now, it could be that they change the laws and then put it back on regular white people, you know, just middle income white people like this man.
Yeah, but I'm not interested in that. Go for the companies like we talked about that successfully disavowed, not publicly, but like changed like their main imports and exports to successfully hide that their original main item was people. Like, I want it from the companies, because some of these regular white people, they don't have it. They don't.
Yeah, but they still need to pay too, because again, his ancestors did own somebody else. And true. whether they owned one or two slaves or several hundred, like some of these big families did, they still need to pay, because they were getting free labor. They were setting themselves and their, you know, their offspring up for a success that we've not had a chance to enjoy in the same way at all. Mm-hmm. So.
And I liked how Ernest laid that out. Just like he said, I forget the exact words, but he was like, your wife's going to leave you. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be her with her daughter. She's going to have to start from the beginning. He was basically like describing our situation. There's nothing that we have ever been able to draw from, you know, like we've never been able to have, like our ancestors were not able to leave us anything for us to mismanage or not, but there was never a thing to pass on that you could rely on, because everything was taken from us. You know, it was against the law for us to be literate, which is like step number one in trying to earn anything. Mm-hmm. Any time we were able to get some sort of gain, it was taken back. You know, yes, you can vote, but you have to pass this literacy test, or you have to own property, or you have to, you know, just like all of these things that literacy really does pave the way for.
And we're talking about light work here, because let's not talk about the bank, the one bank that existed for all emancipated people. And then it was federally protected. So at one point, it would be the equivalent to billions and billions of deposits per day, all Black owned. But then rich people came in, changed the laws, and pretty much emptied out all those banks. So for the longest time, why was your Black grandmother keeping her money in the freezer or in a mattress? Because she could not trust the only bank that she was allowed to use because of that fuckery. And then all of the Black towns, the Oscarville that was flooded, that our friend Ernest came from, you know, Tulsa, the city that used to be Central Park in New York, those were Black towns, and they were taking from us even as we were accumulating wealth. Yes, as we were accumulating wealth. So it's not just, you know, we didn't have anything to begin with coming out of slavery, and then what we built, that was stolen as well. You know, things were denied. So yeah, somebody needs to pay what they owe. Yeah. All of them.
Yeah, you're right. It's just like, they're just able to like play both sides and just play dumb. I'm glad that they showed this type of person a liberal, because they are the worst, because that's what kept this from being like, we know that it's not going to happen. There were little indicators that showed like, yeah, this is a dream. And I was happy that he did it that way, and or that Francesco, whoever's idea it was, I'm glad that they decided to go this way and not like a fantastical type revenge thing that might be kind of satisfying, but it's like that's not gonna happen. It's like Black people like roaming the street just like slashing folks' necks. It was very subtle, and it was done using things that are familiar, you know, laws and like things being garnished from your check. So mm-hmm. I think it does two things. Like, yeah, this is gonna happen without a fight, but it also makes it look doable. Like,
If you're willing to understand why this needs to happen, this doesn't have to devolve into a civil war situation. Just pay what you owe, because you've been benefiting off of it all this time. And so what? You mad at your ancestors, be mad at them, but pay a nigga now.
Yeah. Yeah, this is excellent.
Thank you for listening. Rap in Atlanta is recorded and produced by Nita Charisse and Nikki Ebo.
Our theme music is Joy Clark's Galaxy Groove, performed by Joy Clark. Discover more about this talented artist at joyclarkmusic.com. Rappin' Atlanta's artwork is created by Prime Vice Studios. Learn more about this intellectual property development agency at primevicestudios.com. You can find us on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube. Don't forget to rate, comment, subscribe, and follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Rappin' Atlanta.